on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to the Green Front, where we feature conversations with those on the leading edge of turning our march to eco-oblivion around. I am very pleased to have two of my sheroes on today's show, each passionate, dedicated women of the earth, and both in their own ways, masters of communicating the urgencies and opportunities embedded in our environmental crises. That is crises plural, of course. The first on climate change, the second an expert and author on oceans. Julia Witte will join us in the second half of the hour. Her hot off the press book, Deep Blue Home, An Intimate Ecology of Our Wild Ocean, was just released this week and could not be more timely with the continuing catastrophe in the Gulf Coast. Julia has been down there for several weeks and will share what she saw and experienced firsthand. My first guest is a fellow green activist and mom from my community here in Marin County, north of San Francisco, where there are many eco-minded leaders. But Rachel Finley Guinness is a standout on several fronts. She is a LEED accredited general contractor and designer and is also the founder of Marin's Citizen Climate Lobby. We'll find out what that is, as well as the mood on Capitol Hill, where Rachel was just present for a couple of weeks ago. That is the Senate futzes with an energy bill, waters it down to be more technical. That is the glaciers melt and the oil gushes. Rachel, welcome to the Green Front.
Hi, this is Rachel.
Rachel, great to have you on the program. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, I can, Betsy. How are you doing?
Doing great. We bumped into each other at the premiere of a fabulous new movie called The New Frontier, The Golden Age of Green. And we were both excited because that 57-minute documentary film, but absolutely entertaining piece of work, so well captured the crises and the opportunities and the engineering possibilities of our transition from a fossil fuel-based society to a clean energy future. Wasn't that terrific?
Yeah, I absolutely loved it. Just to see all the possibilities out there for clean, renewable energy is amazing. And to go around the world and see what other people are doing and know that it's things that we can be doing here in the United States if we get the proper motivation on the federal level.
And that's what you're working on. But before we get to that, I just want to ask you, how many other female LEED accredited general contractors are there out there? That seems to be a pretty elite crowd right now. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there are a lot of you out there. I hope so. Hope it's growing.
I can't say I've ever taken a tally. I know that my boss herself is a general contractor, and she accomplished that about 30 years ago. I love her story that it took her about 15 minutes to get the woman behind the desk to understand that she was there for herself, not her husband or her boss.
And you are really forging a pathway, though, in terms of doing green renovations, green remodels in this county of ours that has a lot of green. It's a more affluent part of the country, and you'd think we'd be a little more educated on the green front. And in some ways we are, and in some ways we have a huge eco footprint here because of the affluence. So what are you finding out there before we get into the nuts and bolts of the climate lobby and legislation? Are people more open and interested in, you know, greener building and greener remodeling?
Yeah, it is a mixed front in Marin because, you know, we are a very progressive community, and so there are a lot of protocols coming down from the top that are, you know, insisting that we take green measures in our building. But still, it's hard to get people to sign on because they think it's, you know, more money and they don't necessarily see the financial incentive now. But people are becoming more and more green-minded, if you will, every day. So I'm very happy to be working in this community and having people who are enthusiastic about solutions and understand the, you know, the ultimate repercussions. And if they're really savvy, understand that there is economic benefit in making your homes energy efficient and resource efficient. So,
and if people who can afford that upfront investment and know better don't do it, who's going to? You know, so there really is a responsibility here as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, yeah, I've been encouraged by the clients that we've been bringing in. So, yeah.
And yet that's not enough work on the green front for you. You are very active in the Citizens Climate Lobby. In fact, you founded the local chapter. I know Marshall Saunders from my work with the Climate Project. I believe he founded the national organization. And you're up to some interesting things. Tell us, obviously, there's a very timely piece of legislation stalled in the Senate right now. You were just back there. What is the sense there of whether we're going to get something that, as Eric Pooley, who wrote The Climate War, was on my program last week, said, something strong enough that nature will actually notice?
Yeah. You know, I have to say it is my work in green building that, like, kind of brought me to the next level, and also just our work on energy in Marin County, since we have Marin Clean Energy. I was like, to get people to really embrace the, you know, the changes that we're trying to bring in green building, again, it has to be an impetus, I realize, from at the federal level. There has to be a clear market indicator that this is the direction that we're moving. So, yeah, I learned about the Citizens Climate Lobby, and it's Marshall Saunders' organization. It's a national organization creating the political will for a sustainable climate. And I think that they have a very exciting and very feasible goal to move our economy and our nation in the proper direction. So we just went to Washington for our first national conference, and we were able to meet with 52 legislators in both the House and Senate on both sides of the aisle and really plant the seed about kind of a plan B for climate legislation. Up until now, they've been, you know, pushing various forms of a cap and trade proposal, and cap and trade is unfortunately not the solution, and even the watered down version that they're now talking about putting out, I don't think it's not going to solve our problems. In fact, it will only delay a real solution, because people will say, oh, we've passed something and now, you know, we can sit back, we're good. But cap and trade has been proven not to be effective in reducing carbon, both with the Kyoto Protocol as well as the European model, and the fee and dividend system, as we call it, is a much more transparent, clear, reasonable solution. And we got a lot of great feedback on both sides of the aisle. We were really pleased with our progress.
Okay, before we get to fee and dividend, I certainly want to hear all about that, because that's a relatively new term to me, and I'm sure to many of our listeners. What is wrong with cap and trade? Why can't it work? Why can it not work? And is that the reason it's so difficult to pass, or is it because for those who would prefer to do nothing to combat climate change, they think it's too much?
You know, it's a complex issue, and I would like to steer, you know, your listeners to watch a video called The Huge Mistake that was done by Lori Williams and Alan Zebel, who have both worked on cap and trade legislation for acid rain with the EPA for years, and they did this piece because they recognized, with their, you know, with their volume of experience, that cap and trade isn't the solution for the carbon issue, because carbon is much more complex and diverse a problem, and it takes new technologies to move us away from the fossil fuel. From our fossil fuel reliance. But with acid rain, where a cap and trade initiative did work, it was because there were very simple changes that could happen within the current industry that would allow them to reduce the pollution that was leading to acid rain. Where when you get to carbon, it's very complex. You're talking about creating whole new technologies and bringing those into the market. So it's just a much different animal, and the solution won't do it. It's putting a rigid structure over a volatile market. And what happens is you actually make the energy market more volatile. And we're talking about businesses trying to make predictions and make changes so that they prepare for the rising cost of fossil fuels, whether we create it, you know, through legislation or if we just wait. I mean, there are millions of people that are signing on for the same limited resources every day in emerging markets. So the price of fossil fuels will go up. And so the question is it going to go up in a reasonable, tangible, like, you know, sane way, or are we going to, you know, just enter the madness of not only, you know, huge rises in fossil fuel costs, not to mention the catastrophes that are in line if we, you know, if the process of global warming continues at the pace that it's going now. So,
So the huge mistake, that's something that's on YouTube?
It is. It's a YouTube video, and it just really sums up, you know, the cap and trade problem, and it really explains the fee and dividend. Some people call it the carbon tax and dividend, which might be more familiar sounding to some of your listeners. But tax apparently is a scary word. But in this case, I don't know. I liken it to a vice tax, pollution, carbon pollution being the vice, mm-hmm. and it is a tax that is placed at the well, at the port of entry, at the mine. And it is, you know, putting a price on carbon, and then that price is passed down throughout throughout our society. And the dividend from that tax is actually returned to households to protect households against what will be the rising cost of fossil fuels. So if you use more fossil fuels to heat your home or homes and your SUVs, or, you know, you will pay more of that tax. And if you use less, and hopefully your goal will be to use less and less and less, you will pay less of that tax. And while our economy is changing over to, you know, the new energy economy, and there's enormous profits to be made in this. I mean, you saw the movie The New Frontier. I mean, it is just ripe with possibilities, and the other countries that are instituting green technologies, you don't hear them complaining about it. It's fantastic. So
they're too busy racing to the finish line, and I do believe that's actually where I am most hopeful, Rachel, is, you know, what is more, you know, American than the competitive spirit, you know, innovation, ingenuity, and I think I mean, that has to transverse, you know, any red versus blue craziness that we're involved in. You know, it's really about healthy competition, and why don't we take some ownership of this particular race? Maybe we are, but it's not happening as fast. It's not as obvious to many as it should be. You know, we're so competitive on everything else.
Yeah, and well, I mean, not only would we be helping ourselves by creating this, you know, booming businesses, but the world is waiting to see, you know, what we do, and it will be, you know, it will affect, you know, people around the world. I mean, that's, you know, what Obama was saying in Copenhagen, that, you know, we're waiting to, you know, show what we're planning to actually do, not talk about, but do. And this is just a very clear market indication that things are going to change, and it's got legacy, because when you start, you know, returning a check to everybody, a monthly check to protect, you know, us from, you know, from rising costs, people like this. I mean, it's going over really well in Alaska as far as their, you know, fossil fuel industry is concerned. So people, you know, are going to be attracted to that, and so it will stay in place, where if, let's say, something in cap and trade passes, you know, it's not very popular on the Republican end. And as soon as, you know, when we get a Republican Congress, you know, will they just turn it over? And then we're back at A, and we have just lost time. And we really, that time is not something that we have to waste. I mean, it is, this issue is of the essence.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, we've put it off so long that now it is urgent, and we can't afford to take any detours, can we?
Exactly. That's the problem. It's like we are actually just waiting for, you know, we feel like we're in the final chapter of cap and trade. Like, they don't have the votes that they need in the Senate. And so hopefully that one will take its final, you know, final fall. And then we can start moving to plan B, which, you know, I mean, my goodness, all the big players have said, you know, carbon tax, clear market indicator, predictable, attractive, including, Rex Tillerman, the CEO of Exxon, Gore has called for it. Obama has called for it. I mean, you know, people are saying the words. James Hansen, the leading climate scientist, has said this. Bill McKibben. I mean, all the big players, you know, they realize that we're talking about a transparent, predictable solution that makes people say, okay, now we know where we're going. We can make the investment in clean energy. We see that that's where the market's going.
Right.
With cap and trade, it's volatile. You don't know, you know, you sit back and you wait to see what the market is going to, you know, send you. And it's not good. My favorite line about cap and trade is, they're talking about solving global warming with the lack of creating an invisible substance that will be delivered to nobody. It's the regulation and trade of the lack of creating an invisible substance. We just almost sunk the country because we couldn't figure out home loans. I'm like, I don't really want to count on the lack of creating an invisible substance to save the world. I'm like, yeah, that's not going over with me.
It's funny, but it's tragic, too, because we may just do that, you know. I mean, it's not encouraging. And yet, what motivates you to keep fighting besides your beautiful daughter? And I have one the same age.
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, it's about living in Marin and absolutely being in love with nature, for one. And I have an anthropology background, so, I mean, I have watched the rise and fall of civilizations. And I'm like, yeah, we're in line if we don't do something radical. And, you know, it's just thinking about the generations to come to appreciate everything that we have to appreciate in this world and doing it before it's too late. I'm very aware because of my study of the environment and green building and everything that, you know, we are on a tricky timeline, and there's no time for delay. And, it's the time is now, and of course it's ripe. I mean, this is what we're calling for, not only worldwide, but, you know, President Obama himself has said this is the legislation he wants. And I'm like, we are working to get somebody to support, to sponsor this legislation on Capitol Hill, and then trying to create the support to see it through. And we think that it is attractive on both sides of the aisle. I mean, we had a very good response from the Republican leaders that we talked to, and we talked to many of the senators that are part of the lead group talking about climate change legislation. We actually talked to 52 representatives in all, or, you know, senators and congressmen and women, and it was really exciting, and it was great to just see how accessible our leaders really are. So it's been encouraging.
And this just came across grist.org, quoting Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, confirming that he will gamble on the high-stakes climate legislation, much as he undertook health care and Wall Street reform that for now remains in the rough draft stage, but that will soon be the subject of intense negotiations. He says this could happen by the end of this month. Wouldn't that be nice? Reid has confirmed, I'm paraphrasing here from the article, Reid confirmed the bill will have four parts: an oil spill response, a clean energy and job creation title based on work done in the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee, a tax package from the Senate Finance Committee, and a section that deals with greenhouse gas emissions from the electric utility industry. What do you think about that, capping the electric utility industry?
You know, I wish I could be specific in my example, but there is a utility company in Southern California that put a cap on their carbon output. And, you know, I don't know if it was a particularly hot summer or a really cold winter, but they blew their cap. And so they come up to the people who, you know, who set the requirement. They're like, all right, so here we are. Whose lights do you want us to shut out first? I'm like, you know, caps, you know, in a volatile market, good luck with that. I say create a straight market indicator, create the rising cost of carbon, make it, you know, compatible or exceed clean energy solutions, and let's get moving on the clean energy solution. And I just want to reiterate that when they're talking about this, you know, passing this legislation, what we're talking about, carbon tax and dividend, isn't present on the floor. It is not part of the national conversation at this point. I mean, people are talking about it, but it's not one of our options being debated in the House and Senate. And that's what we're trying to create here. We are trying to get politicians to embrace this idea and debate it on the national level. Like, you don't have to, like, buy into hook, line, and sinker. I feel like if you look at the science, if you look at the economics of it all, it's a smart and clear and transparent solution. So, you know, when I hear that they're about to pass, you know, legislation, does it make me, you know, happy? Well, I'm very happy that they care and that they want to do something about this. I just want to make sure that they get the answer right. And right now, I don't think that they're on. I don't think that the path is the one that will really lead ultimately to the solution. So.
Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, a Republican from Kentucky, is quoted as saying about, I guess, progressive left enviro types, they never miss an opportunity to seize on a crisis to turn to the far left to-do list. This has been a big item on the far left to-do list, a national energy tax. I mean, even if, you know, in general, people on a certain side, you know, of the aisle don't like taxes. We are in crisis here, planetary emergency. You know, would a national energy tax, you know, in and of itself be the worst thing in the world? Like you said, it's like a vice tax, and this one affects everybody, including our children and grandchildren and beyond.
Well, what's
like
so
the
nice
word national energy tax is like, you know, poison to certain people when we have a national, international energy emergency.
Well, like I said, I feel like our proposal was actually getting nice reception on the Republican side. In fact, it seemed that cap and trade was more what they were taking issue with, and some people were even saying that it is, you know, that they wanted to make sure that 100% of the dividend went back to households. I mean, I was like, you know, if anyone had told me that I would be going back to Washington and bonding with Republicans on climate change legislation, I would have fainted. And but that truly was what happened. And I was like, right on. And, you know, I understand that they're about industry. So are we. We're trying to create a massive one, a massive industry infusion. And I'm with them. You know,
okay.
I mean, I work for a small company myself. I understand business. And what's so nice about our proposal is not only is it a clear, you know, predictable outcome for businesses where they can actually make rational decisions and move forward. But also it protects people from the most difficult part of this change. And so it really is like a built-in solution. They liked that it didn't create some kind of government slush fund. They liked that it was positive for, industries, startup investment. And cap and trade, what can I say? It's like putting the solution to the problem in the hands of people who either are spilling oil into our Gulf or just completely undermined our financial institutions through, you know, bad management of home loans. I'm like, I don't really feel like turning to them to the solution. I would rather create the economic impetus and protect the people. This is the people's bill, and it's the industrial bill. I mean, it's just a clear solution. And like I said, people were really, they're gravitating towards it. When they went into that meeting with Obama to talk about, okay, where do we go from here? I was like, I wouldn't be surprised I think this is definitely, you know, in the conversation. We are in the conversation. But I want to see somebody sponsor this. We want to see somebody sponsor this bill. We want to see somebody take up this stuff. But it's going to take a lot of public support. It's going to take a lot of people saying, you know what, I'm tired of, you know, I'm afraid, and they should be if they're not. And I need to see progress. And I want, you know, I want this, the world to be healthy and clean, and I want my children to have possibilities, and I want to see my friends working, and I want to see, like, a sensible solution to a very serious problem,
and
one that will inspire the world.
And I want to see you running for Congress soon, Rachel.
I'll get right on that.
We need more leadership like this. And so where is this fee and dividend proposal? Is it somewhere in what they're considering? Is it, you know, out there besides the Citizens Climate Lobby? Because you've convinced me it makes eminent sense, which is kind of what frightens me. It's much too logical to be successful in the current political climate.
Well, that's why I'm in this. I'm like, you know, I'm like, I'm just, I'm a biz, you know, I'm, I just have to do this because I'm like, the answer to this is like as clear as the nose on my face. And I'm like, obviously, you know, they need somebody to come in and say it to them because it's just like such a clear solution, and we need one right now. So it just inspires everybody to just get up and go. But
it's like everyone's bringing their hands saying, what do we do? What do we do? It's so complicated. And, you know, someone should stand up as you are saying, the emperor has no clothes, but that emperor has green clothes on and they're sustainable, you know.
Oh, yeah, we are living in the time of the Emperor's New Clothes. It's amazing. I went to Washington and I felt like I was Alice in Wonderland. I'm like, what is everybody talking about here? Are you kidding? So anyway, citizensclimatelobby.org, there's the language for our bill, the proposed language for our bill is on there. But also there is, this has been proposed before in the House, and Ingalls right now he proposed legislation that's very similar to ours. So it's not like it has never been proposed before. It's now just like, you know, really bringing it into the conversation as an option and creating the support for it. So
that's
and getting
to know.
Somebody in the Senate to sponsor it. So I'm just like, you want to know what you can do? Write your congressman, write and say, you know, we want a clear solution. We want whether you call it carbon tax and dividend or fee and dividend, we just want a clear and transparent solution to the carbon issue. And, yeah, we want to get this country moving in the right direction again.
Well said, Rachel Guinness. I'm so proud to count you among my friends and colleagues in crime here as we conspire to have some climate change policy that will make sense and make a better future for our kids. Thanks so much for your work, all on a voluntary basis as far as the Citizens Lobby. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, too. Your radio show is fantastic, and I appreciate all the work you're doing as well.
Thank you. Well, my passion is shining the spotlight on ordinary and extraordinary known and unknown citizens who are doing everything they can to turn the eco-tide around, and you are among them. So thank you, my Shiro, my friend, and keep going loudly and head back to Washington. I think they need you in the next couple of weeks. It sounds like they're finally taking this seriously, and hopefully we'll see some action by the end of this month.
I hope so.
Rachel Guinness with the Citizens Climate Lobby. We're going to be hearing more about this fee and dividend proposal. It makes eminent sense, so we're not just going to drop it there. We're going to talk to some more people and maybe some representatives, get them on the green front and see what they think of this very logical approach to a very difficult, complex problem. You're listening to The Green Front. We'll be back right after these messages with another Shiro of mine, Julia Witte. She's written a book just released called Deep Blue Home, and she's just back from the Gulf Coast. We'll find out what she saw and experienced and smelled and heard right after these messages. Stay with us.
This is PRN, Progressive Radio Network.